Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello. Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast about two sad dudes missing their fave comic, which just happens to be the Doom Patrol.
Yes, this is how we pass the time until the Doom Patrol comes back to our pull lists. I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFDPod.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, and you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and our episode's available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. This week, we're turning the show on its head as we pander to the populace.
That's right. We're putting the books aside to look at likely the biggest Marvel movie yet, Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Now, we'll be going full spoilers, but in the interest of not shutting out our regular listeners who haven't seen the movie yet, we're reordering the show to put all the non-spoiler stuff up front. Do you get me, Mike?
I'm not sure I do. Wait, what's that ticking?
It's the Bloomin' Doom Clock!
Okay, so looking at the face of the Doom Clock, we can see that the last issue of the Doom Patrol's own series was issue 22 from volume 5, which came out back in July of 2011. So just on 3 years and about 9 months ago. A little bit sad. So,
God, it gets longer every month.
Well, yes. Funny that. But soon it'll be 10 months because, you know, April's almost over. The last appearance of the Patrol, though, was back in Justice League 33 from October of 2014. So just over 6 months ago.
If you don't count the faux Doom Patrol that was seen last week.
Oh, I will get to that in a minute, Sonny Jim Bob.
Whoa, settle down there.
But this week, back in 1988 of Doom Patrol history, we had Doom Patrol number 11 come out and went on sale for the princely sum of $1. It was written by Paul Kupperberg and penciled by Eric Larson. And the story within was called Betrayed by Larry Trainer.
Oh, controversial issue, this one.
Oh, wasn't it just? Long story short, it saw Larry sending out delightful chap by the name of Reactron to try and steal the negative energy back from Negative Woman so that Larry could have it back all to himself. And meanwhile, we also saw the return of Gargawax and his Plastic Men in that same issue. And he basically sent a space gladiator called Warrior, I wonder what he did, to capture Robot Man, and he basically took Cliff apart.
Yeah.
Big fight. So
take a drink.
Yes.
And Reactron, I believe, is a Supergirl villain, perhaps.
Yes, this is
true.
Shout
out to Dr. Ange.
G'day, Dr. Ange. You are the man. But yes, speaking of the Doom Patrol team that appeared in Convergence New Teen Titans this past week, I'm going to make a judgment call, and I'm going to say that the appearance of that team does not reset any element of the Doom Clock.
Right.
I thought and hard about it, and it's missing one key element that's been in every iteration of the Doom Patrol ever.
I know this. Is it Cliff Steele?
Correct, my friend. Well done. Go to the head of the class, get a gold star.
Sweet.
That's the thing. I thought about it, and I thought, well, they're a Doom Patrol, but they're not the Doom Patrol, because Cliff's been in every single series. From the 60s up until, you know, 2011. He's been in every single one. And I will say that Cliff is the bare minimum that is will be required for any team to be considered the Doom Patrol.
Good golly. That's a big call, Mike.
I'm borrowing your oversized phone, Paul, and I'm making that big call with the big digits.
Awesome. I support you, Mike. I didn't even buy that issue. I thought this is not really the Doom Patrol.
Mm.
Yeah.
I did it out of love for the show and the Patrol and, you know, research. So I'm going to try and claim it back on my taxes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
We're going to go to the Mailbag of Doom segment because today this episode is crazy. We do whatever we want in this one.
It's topsy-turvy, man. Whoa.
It's upside down. Black is white. White is black. The cat's in the fishbowl. all right. So this week on the Mailbag of Doom, we were asking our dear listeners, how do you plan your comic purchases? So I said, this is WFD for the OCD. Anyway, we heard from Carl D. Smith, Carl Smith Writer on Twitter. And he says, I have a very small pool file of books I fear won't be carried on shelf, and I'll splurge on a title or two based on Twitter buzz.
Yeah, Twitter buzz is a big part of my planning. But anyway, we also heard from Katie Kate at KatieScarlet94. And she answered our question with her own question, which was, people plan those?
A little bit ad hoc there, is she?
Yeah, just a bit.
We also heard from Richie O'Hara-Beamond at RickettyOB on Twitter. And he said, haphazardly, which he misspelt, and with frequent oversights, I'm a maverick, untamed by sensible organizational strategies.
Oh, that's what part of his appeal. Oh, yeah. That Richie, such a rebel.
Yeah. You may show up to work, you may not.
We also heard from Cameron Williams at Wasgo. Hi, Cameron. He said that he looks at Aaron Meyer's purchase list and then asks Aaron Meyer's what to buy. Cameron then goes and buys Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and My Little Pony, no matter what Aaron says.
Sweet. It's a fairly unique strategy.
Yeah, that's Cameron.
We heard from Ben at Alligator Hands 2, and he said, I have a list of books I read, then I buy them if I see them out on that day.
That's way
Hang
too
on,
logical.
Let me map that out. Sorry, I can't get a visual of what you do.
We heard from Abud, at AbudF09. He said he tends to follow writers rather than artists or titles. He's dropped pull lists to avoid being forced to buy so much crap.
That's I'm fair. A writer follower. I'm with
you. You are, actually, yeah.
Excellent. We heard from Matt Roberts, Mr. _ Oberts. Mm. I sit down with my local pastor and go through a list, rejecting any that may have sinful material, and then I buy what's left. What a smart ass.
I rate that as answer of the week.
Hats off to you, Matt, and your pastor.
Yeah.
Not many pastors would have time for that.
No. He's a... Oh.
Do you clear what podcast you listen to as well, Matt? Just curious. Shout out to Matt's pastor.
We also heard from Moby1, who is at Shmoby1 on Twitter. He said he gets an idea of what collections to buy through reviews, and then he runs it all by Paul. Never fails. So
yeah.
you're Shmoby's reading guru, are you?
A few years back I convinced Moby to stop getting issues and switch to trades.
Ah.
Yeah. Moby and I, it was interesting. Moby and I, we met through our kids.
Okay.
So his daughter came to my daughter's birthday party and I was wearing a Superman Bizarro t-shirt. So it had the Superman logo backwards.
Right.
And it was purple. And he came up to me and said, nice Bizarro shirt. And then immediately, you know, we did the wink. Like, hey, mate.
Yep.
I know, you know, we know about this stuff.
Yeah.
And then we started ferrying books to each other to lend through our kids. Mm-hmm. And then after a year of doing that, I asked him where he worked and discovered he actually worked at the same place I did.
Oh, my God.
So we stopped using the kids as the go-betweens.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Anyway, we also heard from Karthik Karkarella, and he said, double check mobile notes at LCS's upcoming list the week before, put friends' mentions into a maybe category if different, and then check with Edge of the Universe comics site and the week's Tegnasarium segment episode for if I've missed anything. And then he gave us a YouTube link, which I didn't click. But that's.
Yeah, that's.
You know about it?
Yeah, that's Katie Rex's, I guess, vodcast, videocast, whatever the cool kids are calling it. She basically does an episode every new comic book day as to what's coming out and what she recommends. So, and it's good fun. So, oh, yeah, we might share that link on our Twitter feed so other people can enjoy.
Yeah, that's cool.
We also heard, oh, look, Dr. Ange once again.
Dr. Ange.
Dr. Ange. He said he looks at solicits when they come out months in advance. Then Tuesday, he checks the store site for a list of arrivals. He usually has a couple of books that might be impulse buys, depending on his mood. If he's having a rough work day, that'll leave him with one impulse buy. But his store pulls his books, and he won't add one to the list until he's read three issues to see if it's worthy. That's fair. Oh, yep. And then he also said, sorry, so he's got no idea of what he's thinking of buying when solicits come out, but day before shop trip, check site and make list.
We also heard from Jess Camacho, who's at Camacho Jess, and she said, I don't plan, I'm reckless and just go to the store. I wonder if she takes money, she might just steal things. She might be completely reckless.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, Mike, let me hear it. How do you do it?
I'll admit Twitter buzz plays a bit of a part in my planning because one of the reasons I got into Twitter was to, you know, find other fans of comic books, and here we are today. So, you know, whatever's getting a bit of attention on Twitter will play a part. I'll also, I don't buy previews or anything like that, but I'll sort of read other comic book sites and see what's sort of coming up in a few months' time. And then, if it sounds interesting enough, I'll put it on my list straight away. And I'll give it a few issues and either drop it after about six issues or I'll just get the whole thing. So, I kind of...
Unless you hate it straight away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I guess I kind of plan a fair bit in advance and then give things a decent chance and... Wow, that rhymed a bit too much. But yeah, I guess I see what's getting attention and what's coming out sort of down the track. And yeah, I'll give pretty much anything a chance. So, but usually I'm right onto my comic shop to add it to my list straight away if it sounds interesting enough.
So, right.
How about yourself, Paul?
Ooh, are you ready for this?
Hang on, I'll do up my seatbelt. Yep, go.
Okay, well, I'm mostly a trade and hardcover purchaser, so I get a bit more checking things out via third parties before I buy things. But anyway, my habit is mostly I buy DC books. DC Universe guy, love that stuff. So I tend to get the early list of what trades are coming out in like the forecast 6 months. And then and I look at that list and I usually highlight the things that I like from that. And if I know they're dead certs, I'll usually buy them as soon as I can afford them via somewhere like Book Depository, who do free shipping to Australia. Little plug there for them. And when the solicits actually come out, I will copy the entire solicits, turn it into a Word document, go through the whole thing just in case I've missed something, spot things that are in issues that will be eventually collected that I might like. I also use a bit of the Twitter buzz to decide what trade purchases I'll get. So that's mostly how I come across Marvel books. So things like She-Hulk and Superior Foes of Spider-Man I've got onto because of Twitter. Hawkeye is another one that I've followed that way. Yeah, so it's quite ritualistic. Yeah.
I'll admit I have my spreadsheet that I update every week after I've got that week's book. So I'm like, oh, okay, that one's only got one issue left. So, you know, counting down to the finale.
Oh, I do that. We are so OCD.
Just a little bit.
All right, so that's it for the mailbag of doom. For Doom's planning this week, because we're waiting for Doom, we occasionally go to the movies. And this week we live in Australia. Actually, most weeks we live in Australia.
Every week we live in Australia, Paul.
Every week. Yeah, true. Yes, we haven't immigrated anywhere else, so that's true. Okay. So, because we live in Australia, we got to see Avengers Age of Ultron a bit earlier than some of the other parts of the world.
Didn't we just?
Very exciting. And because of that, we tried to see it as early as possible.
Yeah.
So we could take advantage of that window of being early, so we could feel really Oh, pretty cool, didn't we?
Still do.
So where did you go to see it?
I went to my local cinemas at Stafford Shopping Centre.
Oh, nice.
Hoyt Cinema, Stafford Shopping Centre.
Right. My wife wanted to go. She likes to have reserve seating because she hates not having control of where she sits. Because, mm-hmm. you know, she has her standards. So we went to Canberra for the night to see it. So brought the kids in across to Canberra where I work, and we went to the Dendy in the city on the opening night.
Ooh.
Ooh. And, treated ourselves to that. So no spoilers straight away, but what were your impressions, Mike?
Overall, I thought it was pretty good. It was a good action-packed romp. There were a few quiet moments that may not have worked entirely for me. And I've seen some other aggrieved parties share slightly stronger thoughts on those same quiet scenes. But yeah, I think I was worried that it was going to suffer from sequelitis and just pretty much be more of the same. But I think it got past that.
Do it all again, exactly the same.
Pretty much. There was a bit less heroes fighting heroes in this one, which was good. But yeah, overall, I would rate it. I think it was pretty damn good.
Did you like the first act better or the last act or the middle act?
I like the last. I'll say that the last third of it, I think, where it was all happening. It was all down to the wire. You know, there was great peril everywhere. Our heroes were they doomed? Were they going to make it through? Were they going to save the day? It was, it was quite thrilling in parts. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
How did you find it?
How did I find it? I'm going to say I was a little disappointed.
Oh.
Yeah, I foolishly had very high hopes for it. I actually fully expected it to be much better than the first one, and I didn't feel it was.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so I can get into that when we turn off the spoiler shield. But act-wise, I think, the last act was probably the strongest.
Mm.
But, yeah, I got a bit squirmy in my seat in some of the slow bits, I must admit, and I don't remember doing that in the Avengers.
Yeah, I think they've tried to give us a bit more backstory on some characters, and some of that may have been a little bit unnecessary.
Yeah.
And a little bit, as you say, squeamish as well.
Yeah.
With one thing in particular, but
All right, should we lift the spoiler shield and go for it?
Okay, let's... Final warning, if you don't want to hear any spoilers... Stop listening to this episode right now, because we're going to get into it. We're going to spoil a bunch of stuff.
Ready?
Are you guys ready? We won't be offended if you turn off now. You can come back next week. It'll be nothing but Doom Patrol next week.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Goodbye, everyone. See you next week.
Goodbye. For those of you
if you're turning off. No.
For those of you who wish to stay for spoilers, thanks for staying with us. For those of you that don't want any spoilers, we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Spoiler shield.
We're in the spoiler zone.
Spoiler shield deactivated.
Oh, yeah.
Did you like that sound effect?
I did. That's very Star Wars.
Okay, here we go. Spoilers, in depth. Let's get it out of
Okay. The opening of the film is basically an assault on a Hydra base controlled by Baron Strucker. And I felt this action scene was a complete mess.
Really?
Yeah, it was like the digital artists were told to just put something in every single blank bit of the screen, and they did. So it felt, I don't know, I just didn't have a visual action flow to it, you know, that a really good director brings. Like, I brought to mind James Cameron's ability to really coherently do an action scene, which has, you know, logical geography and, you know, tells a story. And to me, this was just a mess visually.
Wow.
But it did have, like, the highlight of the film was in this scene, and that's Captain America threw his motorbike at someone. That bit was so cool. I can't even work out in my head how he did it, but I remember seeing it and going,
I know how he
Whoa.
Did it.
And I think I embarrassed my daughter by saying something out loud when it happened. Like, whoa! Whoa!
She would have been rolling her eyes and going, oh, Dad. Yeah, I reckon it was comic book science that allowed him to do that just quietly. But anyway, so that move of his, that was your highlight of the film?
Yep.
Wow. Yep.
That's
okay.
The thing I carried away. That's the bit
okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, there was fun team dynamics. They started the running joke about Cap being upset about Iron Man swearing.
That was cool.
Cautioning the whole team about language, and then they all teased him about it for the rest of the film.
For the rest of the film. That was great, yeah.
Yeah. And Baron Von Strucker has the twins, who are Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and he's debating whether to get them into the battle. Oh, there's that great bit where he says, no surrender, and then turns to his colleague and said, we're going to surrender. So, I mean, that's very...
Such a typical villain, yeah.
Yeah, it's very Joss Whedon, where, you know, there's a bold moment that's really undermined immediately by a funny bit. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
so...
I'll have to disagree with you there, because I thought that opening scene, that was like, to me, that was like a comic book come to life, you know, especially that shot where it slowed down as they all kind of leapt off the Jeep and were all, you know, one unified group going for the bad guys. I was like, that's like a panel from a book. That's awesome.
Well, I think perhaps some of my frustration was my brain was overstimulated throughout it. You know, there was too much visually going on, and I wanted to get a grasp on it all. And it just, you know, irritated my subconscious because it was so busy. So I think that's one part of the film that I would enjoy on a rewatch is, you know, getting more of a handle on the action.
Yeah, you're right. It was a very fast pace, that intro. So, yeah.
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 Anyway, so, the twins get involved in the battle and immediately start influencing things. So, you know, they allow Hawkeye to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Baron Von Strucker is captured by the locals. But we by the armed forces. But we see that this is in a country called Sokovia, made up of Stan.
Yeah.
We see that the locals don't like Iron Man's... Iron Man has his Iron Legion, or I think that's what they're called. They're like robots.
The Iron Legion, yeah.
Yeah, who are there policing for him. And the crowd don't like him. The locals are chucking rocks at them and things like that.
Mm.
And, so we're getting a little bit of the political background. But this whole raid is to capture Loki's staff, which... if you remember, we saw at the end of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, in the hands of Baron Von Strucker.
Mm.
Yes, so this is all about getting that, because Thor's been told to go and get it by Odin. If you know who Odin is at this point, because of Thor 2, that's actually Loki wants it back.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
I have to go back and rewatch all the earlier Marvel films to make sense.
I'll pause and you go and do that.
Okay, I'll be back in a bit. 2 hours later.
Did you watch them all simultaneously?
Yeah, I had every TV in the house going.
Awesome. Anyway, so they pacify the base. They get the staff. Hawkeye's injured. Hulk is basically now... they go code green and he gets involved in a battle, and then... Black Widow talks him down after battles, which is an interesting connection between the two characters that continues to grow. And I think at this point you start to see that, you know, Black Widow is getting much more of a focus in this film than previous Marvel films.
Yeah, doesn't she just?
Mm. Yeah. And I think the other character who really got the spotlight was Hawkeye.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, responding to all those Hawkeye's lame, why is he there? He has no superpowers. That was really addressed very well in this film, actually, I thought. Yeah. Because if everyone's all-powerful and a god, you need someone to keep them grounded.
That's right.
Yeah.
And speaking of grounded, can we talk about what we learned about him in this film?
Yeah, let's try and get there plot-wise. I mean, how are you with remembering the plot? Like, it's a tremendously busy film, so...
It is, now that you mention it, and it's... Yeah, there's a lot going on in all of its time.
Yeah, so I guess we should mention that when Iron Man gets into the base ahead of everyone else to recover the staff, Scarlet Witch actually messes with his mind, and he sees a vision of the... basically, the portal through which the Chitauri came through, he sees that a vision of that, and it's wide open, and the Chitauri have basically conquered Earth, and he's surrounded by the bodies of his Avenger colleagues.
And all the space whales coming through again.
Yeah, and that's where you see Captain America's shields busted, and all the things that they, and the hammers discarded and all that. But it's all a vision. And part of this, I think, I did have a problem with Scarlet Witch's powers in this film because I just thought they weren't clearly defined. Like, I always thought she had probability influencing powers. So if someone was about to hit you, their hit wouldn't hit. It's like a bad dice roll in a Dungeons and Dragons game. Am I correct in thinking that?
As far as I'm aware, because I haven't read a lot of Scarlet Witch stuff, I believe you are correct in that, Hex powers affected the probability of something. She controlled the outcome of it, essentially, or altered it enough to change the outcome. Whereas in this, it seemed like, she's got telekinesis and mind control. And it's like,
She does, like, force blasts and moves things around. But she also misses...
very generic mutant-y.
Yeah. So we had that quite the funny bit where Hulk's worried that Banner is worried that he hurt people in the battle, and I think Cap asks for reassurance, and Thor goes off about how the gates of hell are filled with the screams of your enemies.
Thor basically said, "Yeah, you killed a lot of people," and Cap's like, "No, shut up."
So, I mean. That's one thing that this film had. It had some funny lines. It had some good dialogue. And it was in the service of the script. I don't think it was, let's put a funny bit here for no reason.
It also made them seem a lot more like an actual team. A group of people that have, been together and spent some time together, which was cool.
Yeah. But they get back to their base. Hawkeye is being healed by Dr. Cho. Korean scientist who basically is doing lots of comic book science to repair the human body, and she talks about this cradle that she's got that wouldn't take a sec if she had that with her. And Banner and Stark get in a corner and start talking about the Ultron project, which Banner's been thinking about doing, which is basically artificial intelligence to police the world and get rid of the need for Avengers. And he's realized that this staff Strucker was experimenting on has like an artificial intelligence inside it, and they could use that to do the Ultron project properly. And so they've got 3 days before before Thor's leaving, so they have this little window to use the staff.
They have a awesome comic book science montage.
Yeah, comic book science montage. That was great, wasn't it? Moving around the computer screens and everything. They don't have a big monitor like the Doom Patrol, I noted.
No, they have lots of decent-sized ones.
Hollow monitors in the air around them.
Yeah, lots of, worried brows and pacing back and forth and tapping on screens mid-air. But giant screens, no.
Yeah, it needed some 80s song about thinking, huh?
We're going to build an Ultron.
Yeah.
Protect the world from evil with our robots. Yeah.
But Stark is basing his design on Jarvis, his artificial intelligence that they already have. Mm-hmm. And he brings up a nice hologram of Jarvis, who's a big orange blob. And he brings up the brain inside the staff, which is a big even bigger blue blob.
Giant blob, yeah.
Yeah, and then they're doing all these tests and they're all failing, so they walk out of the room and naturally the test happens in the background while they're not looking.
Yeah.
And Ultron comes to life as a disembodied computer voice that basically has a little argument with Jarvis and then splats Jarvis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, cut to they're having Avengers having a party. Why are they having a party? I didn't suss that.
I don't think that was explained, though.
Yeah.
Or it was explained so briefly that I immediately forgot what the reason was. But
yeah. It seemed like a very LA party or something. It seemed very cool. Anyway, even though it's New York. But so at this party, we see this is the scene where everyone's trying to pick up the hammer. You know, can I pick up who's worthy? I love the bit where Cap moves it a tiny bit. And Thor looks very worried when he sees that.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But and there were guest stars at this party. So we had War Machine.
Yep.
Rhodey.
Yep.
He was there. Dr. Cho was there to check out Thor. Who else was there?
Stan Lee was there.
Stan Lee was there. Another Stan Lee cameo. Yep. Not the best, I thought.
No.
It wasn't a subtle one.
No. But we got an Excelsior out of him.
He did, yes. And anyway, the party dies down and then Ultron bursts through the wall and it's full on James Spader, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So his personality has basically been built off Tony, I would say. So he's got like sarcasm and, you know, biting wit and arrogance that just like Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that as the film went on, Ultron got more and more snarkier.
Yeah.
By the end of it, he was just like, oh. So that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has commandeered the Iron Legion, who all burst through the wall, and everyone has to fight them. And they basically get their asses kicked, don't they?
Pretty much. Yeah.
And Ultron makes off with the staff. Not the people who work there, but, you know, local staff. He doesn't make off with the catering crew.
Good God.
Work for me now.
I demand a feast for Ultron.
Yeah. And then Tony realizes that Jarvis has been trashed. Jarvis is dead. That's sad. His systems are all offline. All the data they got from Struck has been deleted. So then they start brainstorming by looking through the paper files, which is how we used to do it back in the day. You know, then a sort of typical movie connection where someone spots a face they know, they leads them to a connection to Wakanda, and we get the mention of Wakanda here. And I got quite excited at this point because I thought we were off to Wakanda, which is where Black Panther resides.
That's right.
The Marvel Universe.
We did kind of go to Africa, but not actually Wakanda itself.
Yeah, so Wakanda is the made-upistan where vibranium comes from, which is a made-up metal.
Yep.
Made-up alloy. And that's what the Captain America shield is made from.
Mm-hmm.
So because of this photo, they connect that this guy, Ulysses Claw, has been to Wakanda and been branded a thief. He's got a little burn mark on his neck.
Literally branded, yeah.
Yeah. And so he's got vibranium and they figure that Ultron probably wants the vibranium. So off they go to like an abandoned shipyard where all these old Hulks are just not Hulks like as in the Hulk, but Hulks as in discarded ships.
There we go.
Yep. Yeah. Following me? Good.
Yep.
Are just sitting around and inside one of them is Ulysses Claw's base. And this was Andy Serkis in his Marvel movie debut. So how do you think Andy did?
For a character I don't really know anything about, I thought he did okay. He was clearly an arms dealer of some sort who was clearly not a nice character. And yeah, I thought it was a good introduction to that character. I'm sure we'll see more of him in Black Panther. Well, that's my guess anyway, when that film comes out. So
yeah.
But yeah, Andy Serkis always does a good job. Pretty much.
I was amused by his fear being, Ultron talks to him about his fear, because Ultron gets there first with the twins come first, actually. Yeah. and yes. his guns get unloaded by Quicksilver, which was a nice little bit. And they're about to threaten him, and he says, "I'm afraid of cuttlefish," which that's crazy. Like, who'd be afraid of cuttlefish? That's like being afraid of moths. Do you reckon?
Yeah.
But then Ultron shows up, and I really like this. There's a flexible moment where Ultron threatens him, and Ultron basically goes from standing to leaning completely over him with his face like an inch off the floor, which is really cool. And Ultron cuts his arm off for no reason and then says sorry sarcastically.
Sarcastically.
And then the Avengers burst in, and it's fight time, fighty-fighty time.
Pew, pew.
And in this fight particularly, the Hulk's Banner's waiting on the Quinjet, and the rest of the team are fighting around. And Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver basically mess with the whole team. So she flits around and mind controls people, and they all go off into visions, which were bizarre and didn't really make too much sense to me. So
this was one of the scenes where I thought it was kind of unnecessary, really.
Yeah. But, you know, I would have been happy if she just probability messed them up. But, you know, I guess this gave the team something to recover from, because this is really a total loss for the team.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So Stark goes fighting Ultron. Thor has a vision where he's at a rave. Captain America's at an old time dance where he's looking at the life he could have had with Peggy Carter. So we got a Hayley Atwell cameo.
Spoiler.
We also saw Idris Elba in the Thor cameo.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Idris Elba hates being in Marvel films these days. So.
Really?
Yeah, apparently he's whinging about it every chance he gets, and he's doing the contract. He's under contract, so.
Poor
that's
him.
Nice. Yeah.
It'd be terrible to have a steady stream of work coming in. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, there was a cool bit where she tries to get Hawkeye, and he immediately retaliates and sticks some sort of psionic arrow on her forehead and says, "Nah, I've done mind control, not going there again."
Now, that was cool.
That was cool. And that
because
was like,
he said, you know, already had to deal with the mind control stuff, not again, you know.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. And I think that's the first hint we get that this is, you know, we're getting more Hawkeye in this film, and it's not going to go the same way. I love the bit where Quicksilver tried to grab Thor's hammer and discovered that no, he cannot interfere with its velocity, and that takes him out of the fight for a sec.
Oh, doesn't it just?
Yeah. So the Avengers are down. Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch spot Banner waiting in the Quinjet and decide, let's mess with him. And Tony and Ultron are flying around just having a video game fight in the sky. I wasn't crazy about that.
Nah.
And then we get the bad guys make off with the vibranium, and the heroes who are still active suddenly have to deal with a rampaging Hulk in some African city.
Yeah. Maybe that was Wakanda. I'm not sure.
No, it wasn't Wakanda. I definitely think it wasn't in Wakanda, because Wakanda's like this place that's really hard to get into and
that's true.
Out of. Yeah. So I don't
again, think I think this was a scene that we kind of didn't really entirely need. Or it could have been shorter.
Well, this was a fight I didn't want. I mean, I've seen the Avengers fight in the last film.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't need another fight between them. No. I mean, it was cool. Like, despite my not wanting to see it, it had some really cool moments. I loved when the Hulkbuster's armor's on, and you know Tony's got the Veronica thing hovering in the sky, replacing limbs as soon as they're ripped off.
Yeah.
And when he's doing the jackhammer punches and going, "Go to sleep, please go to sleep, please go to sleep." and when he's freaking out when he knocks out the Hulk's tooth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I was uncomfortable with the, you know, the collateral damage and the people in the midst of all this and all that
sort
of stuff.
There we go. Yeah. I think that's something that, I mean, yes, it happens in comic books and this is a comic book movie, but when you see it kind of there on the screen being portrayed so realistically, it gets a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. So that fight, it's spectacular. And I'm quite amazed that Tony actually managed to defeat the Hulk. I mean, I like the bit where he first tries to cage him with that cage that assembles around him that immediately falls into the ground and doesn't matter. So, I mean, I think action-wise, this was the most coherent and strongest action scene of the film, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wasn't that into the cause of it. I mean, the stakes of it were annoying rather than thrilling.
Yeah. As you said, hero versus hero, it's just wasting everyone's time, really, because we've seen it before.
So. Yeah, and we've seen it at Avengers. And, oh, I mean, the good news is I don't think this will happen in Civil War. Well, I could be wrong about it. What do you think? Do you think I'm wrong?
You've not read Civil War, have you, Paul?
What's it about? Is it about them all teaming up?
Yeah. Let's say. They travel back in time to the American Civil War. That's what it's about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, the team fly away from this battle. Everyone's upset. Mm. They're not talking to each other. Banner's really freaked out because he went nuts. Mm. At this point, I'm hoping that Tony is thinking, don't use the evil scepter to create an AI.
I bet you were disappointed then.
Anyway. Yeah. This is where the team go. They need a safe house and they end up at Hawkeye's little farmhouse.
Yeah.
In the country. Mm. Yeah. And we learn a few things about Hawkeye in this bit.
Well, yeah. He's got a family, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a Mrs. Hawkeye and some little Hawkeyes running around.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I don't know about you, but this was quite unexpected.
It was. And the team at this point are feeling pretty low. I mean, there's some funny stuff with Thor knocking things off tables and shoving them under tables like Lego and things like that. The team have really, I mean, there was confrontations with Tony earlier, but this is sort of the aftermath of that where no one's really happy with Tony. Everyone's feeling angry, I guess.
Mm.
Oh, Mrs. Thor was played by Linda Cardellini?
Yes.
Yes, who's Velma in the Scooby-Doo movies, if for those of you who like that.
Yeah.
I like the wood chopping scene where Cap and Iron Man are chopping wood together. Cap, in one moment of frustration, tears a bit of wood in half.
Yep.
Which is rad.
And Tony takes a step back like, whoa.
And then he says, don't touch my pile.
Yeah, so and again, we had another scene between Black Widow and Hulk when they're kind of umming and ahhing about what they're going to do about their relationship. And
that's a bit flirty McFlirt. And
a little bit, yeah. A little bit disturbing, too, in what we learn about Black Widow's background as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, she had some unpleasant flashbacks when Scarlet Witch messed with her head, which showed sort of the Russian Dance Academy with, a graduation ceremony where you have to kill someone with a hood on their head. Mm. It's very Game of Thrones, actually. And she reveals that as part of her final graduation, she was sterilized.
And kind of Banner's non-reaction to that, really. It was kind of, it was a bit awkward.
Well, I mean, this comes immediately after he said, are you crazy for wanting to be in a relationship with me? You know, I can't have children.
Yeah.
You know, I can't be around little people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't quite sure. Well, I kind of get what they were trying to do with that scene, but it just seemed, again, to be a bit of filler.
Well, it's a very, very heavy moment. I found myself looking at my kids in this moment and thinking, what are you guys thinking when you see this? Do you even understand it? Anyway, Tony gets called into the shed to fix the tractor, and there's Nick Fury waiting for him. And which was I wasn't expecting at this point.
No.
I mean, there's so many people in this film, you start forgetting that people exist in the Marvel Universe. So when they show up, it's like, oh, that guy. Mm. Anyway, so he doesn't, I mean, I think Tony is very defensive, but Nick doesn't get into that and basically says, no, we've just got to get on and fix this.
Yeah.
There's a great line that Nick Fury says about Ultron is breeding like a Catholic rabbit. So this little bit of chatting leads to them connecting that Ultron wants to evolve, and there's Banner spots a drawing of a butterfly and says, okay, we've been dealing with this genetic lady. Maybe we should see what's up with her just in case. And we cut immediately to her being threatened by Ultron, who does the mind control thing with the staff, which is the first time it happens in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she ends up working for him, and he decides he wants to have a real body.
A real boy.
Pinocchio moment here. Yeah, I don't want to be artificial anymore. I want to be real. So she's using her magic cradle of comic book science to create this new body. Oh, yeah, at this point we learned something about Ultron was trying to get nuclear codes, but someone kept changing them.
Yes.
And I went, in my head I'm going, it's Black Panther. Black Panther's interfering. Black Panther's hacking. I don't know if Black Panther's much of a hacker. I know he's super techie. But, I turned out to be completely wrong about that.
You did.
I did. Mm. Yeah. And then we saw that as this body is coming together and Ultron is downloading himself into this body, Scarlet Witch is able to read the mind of the body because she couldn't read Ultron's brain because it was artificial.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
And she sees that Ultron has a horrible end for the Earth planned. And she immediately un-mind controls Dr. Cho.
Well, that's when they take off, and isn't that when the Avengers suddenly turn up?
Yes, the Avengers turn up and it's time for a new fight. And then we have this. This is probably one of the. I think actually this was probably my favorite action scene of the film was the. When Ultron puts the cradle in the truck, he's got the Ultron robots defending it. Cap's fighting him to keep him busy. Hawkeye and Black Widow are in the jet. I thought this was a really strong action scene.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Again, really busy, but this was really well done. Yeah.
Well, I found it more coherent than the earlier one, just because there weren't a billion lasers going off in every single corner of the screen.
Whatever.
Did I tell you where I felt about the start? Anyway. At least Cap threw a motorbike. That's... So we have quite a good action scene that, Widow drops out on the motorbike, gets into the traffic. There's cars flipping everywhere. There's Cap fighting on the truck. Hawkeye getting shot out in the air. And this ends with the Avengers capturing the cradle, but Ultron capturing Black Widow for some reason.
I think she was just trapped and they couldn't get her away in time, but they got they got the cradle, which was the mission. So
Anyway, then with the cradle, now Tony and Bruce have worked out that Jarvis is still alive, and Jarvis was the one mucking around with the launch codes for the nukes. So Jarvis has been undermining Ultron the whole time.
Go Jarvis!
They decide, or Tony decides, and Bruce doesn't argue, that let's create another artificial body and, well, use this artificial body that Ultron was going to use, and we'll put Jarvis in there and we'll have that sort of...
Yeah. I like... Well, Banner did kind of put up the argument that, you know, we're going to create an AI to fight the AI that we shouldn't have made in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, and I should point out that Ultron smashed the jewel that was on the...
Yeah. Ultron figured out that the I guess, magical computer science computer that was within the gem...
Was inside the gem.
Yeah.
And he smashes it and brings it out and sticks it on the forehead of the artificial body. Mm-hmm. Thor buggered off from Hawkeye's place to go on a little vision quest in a wading pool. And he went and found Dr. Eric Selvig.
Yeah, that was cool.
Another cameo. And they found this magical Norse wading pool, and Thor went in there. And he had visions of all the Infinity Gems that have been popping up in the movies so far. So
that was cool.
The the Aether from Thor 2. We had the one from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
And we had the Cosmic Cube, mm-hmm. or the Tesseract. I like calling it the Cosmic Cube. It's cooler. And this one. So he realized that all this gem stuff's going on in these films. Mm. I wonder if any of the fans noticed that.
Maybe.
Anyway, half the Avengers show up and want to try and stop Tony from doing another artificial creation. With good reason, I thought.
Oh, yeah. And we had more heroes fighting heroes.
Yeah, and Quicksilver gets involved and he races and sabotages the whole thing. Hawkeye is basically looking for Black Widow and she's built herself a little Morse code thing that he can hear. And he's downstairs and there's a cool bit where Quicksilver's standing there and he just sees this bullet going up in front of him really slowly, which is presumably his super speed kicking in, and then he falls through the floor because they've got a glass floor that Hawkeye shot a bullet through. Mm. That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the midst of all this fight, suddenly Thor lands on top of the cradle, which is like a big sarcophagus, and summons electricity and supercharges it, and then it bursts open and the being inside comes out, throws Thor across the room. They're about to go all fighty, and then suddenly this thing stops and looks itself in the glass, and it's obviously very intelligent. And this is the debut of the Vision, played by Paul Bettany, who's been doing the voice of Jarvis since Iron Man. What did you think of the Vision?
I thought he was pretty cool. I thought the way he was introduced kind of, it made sense. I don't know a lot about his actual comic book history and how he was created, other than that, Ultron tried to create him as another evil robot, but he became good for whatever reason. But I thought it was really well done in the film, yeah.
Yeah, there's a great bit where he's just come to life and he's looking at Thor and he sees Thor's cape and he grows a cape of his own instantly. I like that bit. But they're all debating, can they trust this thing? And in the midst of this, you kind of get the moment of the film where the Vision casually hands Thor his hammer.
I had people at my session actually clap when that happened.
Our whole session gasped and everyone sort of freaked out a bit when it happened. Yeah. And people were sort of laughing and whooping a bit
because
it was such an unexpected moment in the midst of all this. And, we had all that set up before that no one can pick up the hammer except Thor and, to do so you must be worthy. And so,
Vision's definitely worthy.
Yeah. Either that or he's artificial. Anyway. Yep. So everyone sort of has to trust him at this point. So then they work out Hawkeye's worked out that Black Widow is in Sokovia in that castle where they did the first battle.
Imagine that.
Against Strucker. So they all zoom off there. And at this point, Joss Whedon makes a clear statement about how he felt about the mass destruction and civilian casualties in Man of Steel, because everyone is all about, let's save the civilians.
Mm.
And we get the Joss Whedon trademarked cameo featured civilian, which is this girl with really big knockers. did you notice her, Mike?
I'm actually trying to recall which one she was, honestly.
She was the girl with large breasts who was always the civilian that they were trying to... You saw everything from her point of view a bit.
Okay.
He did the same thing in the first film where you had that girl who works in the cafe and...
Yes, okay. I'm with you now. Yep.
Yeah, anyway.
Again, I think by the time they get to Sarkovia for the big final scene and it's full on the Avengers versus Ultron and all his robots, again, there's so much going on.
It's
really busy.
Yeah, so they start evacuating the city because they know there's going to be a big fight with lots of Ultron bots. Then suddenly the ground starts shaking and the entire city starts lifting out of the ground.
Mm.
Yeah. Banner's rescued Black Widow from the castle, which isn't in the part of the city which is rising,
mm-hmm.
whereas Ultron has sort of built his center in this church, which is in the heart of the city. And he's used comic book science and all the vibranium to build engines under the city to make it fly up. They know that his plan is to actually force a new catastrophe on the world of having the city flip over and then plummet down and create like a meteor strike on the city because he couldn't use the nukes.
No,
so he's, and that will bring a sort of holocaust across the whole world.
It's a do-it-yourself extinction-level event.
Yeah, yeah. So city rising up, which is cool. Banner has basically said to Widow, "We can just get out of here. You know, there's nothing we can do." And she says, "I love you." And then she pushes him off a cliff into the hole left by the city. And as he's falling, she says, "But I need the other guy."
Yeah.
Yeah, which was a bit of a shock. And anyway. And then a few minutes later, we see her riding the Hulk very roughly up as he leaps up to the city before it gets too high.
That was kind of cool. You know, the Hulk doing his flying jump and she's holding on for dear life onto his back.
Yeah. Rough stuff. And everyone's got a job to do. So they're working out how they end up having one of those, can we save everyone? Maybe we have to sacrifice those people on the city to save the rest. And I love that Cap is like, that is unacceptable. We are not doing that.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, I refuse to accept that in Captain Janeway's voice.
Stay on target.
So they're all at a loss what to do. Banner's worked out that he can blow up the city, but no one knows what to do with all the people who are still stuck in there. And this was a nice bit when Fury turns up in a helicarrier.
That was an awesome moment.
Yeah.
When S.H.I.E.L.D. arrived and War Machine was there with them.
Yeah. He's Maria Hill.
The cavalry arrived just in time. It was great.
Yeah. I don't know why Falcon wasn't there. I was expecting Falcon to be part of it. Don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. So he's got these little barges that start flying over and shuttling people off. And what's the name of the game? Kill all the Ultron bots and stop them reaching this device in the middle of the city to flip the jets and start the city plummeting. So this was one of those very, very busy CGI-heavy fights.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some good moments in it. There's that great bit where Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch end up holed up, getting shot at in this building, and he basically says, stay here, but if you go outside, you're an Avenger.
That was a cool scene. It really motivating stuff from Hawkeye.
I love what he says. What does he say? I'm on a flying city surrounded by robots and I've got bows and arrows. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that, Hawkeye has more to do and say in this one. And it's almost like they got his kind of snark from the Matt Fraction, David Aja series.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool though. It was cool.
Yeah. And I think my reptile brain at this point was going, oh, they've done all this work on Hawkeye and they've shown us his family. He's going to die. I started to get that twitch in the back of my head.
Same here. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, big fight. Most of the heroes get off. Oh, there's a few cars go off and Thor and Iron Man get them up. Thor lobs a girl up to Captain America, which was cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Lots and lots of robots.
One of the damaged Ultron bots manages to escape.
Yeah, and this time they've pared them down, so there's hardly any left. Vision fix it so he can't jump into the internet. So he's got no escape route anymore. He can jump between his robots, but he can't get anywhere else. So he is actually basically mortal at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Hulk bashes him. There's quite a good thump from the Hulk, isn't there?
Yep.
Oh, he's about to make a James Spader speech and the Hulk throws him out of there before he can even say anything smart. So a bit like the Loki moment in the first film.
Yeah.
Ultron ends up in the Quinjet and he does a strafing run on the island. It's a fly. It is an island now in the sky at this point.
Sure.
And Hawkeye has got off the barge to go rescue this kid. And there's a cool moment because he's using his Hawkeyes to spot this kid in the rubble. So, and Hawkeye looks done for. And then at the last second, he gets moved out of the way by Quicksilver, who has one of the most bloodless bullet deaths I've seen in a film ever.
Yeah, his body stopped those bullets really well.
All over his outfit.
Yeah.
But I mean, who wants a super gory Avengers film, really?
Oh, no one. Sure.
You do?
Maybe.
Yeah? You want RoboCop level gore?
Oh, let's not go that far.
I want to see Quicksilver's torso and nothing else.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, anyway. Were you expecting Quicksilver to bite it?
No. I was like you. I was thinking that Hawkeye was going to bite it after all the build-up.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a surprise. And, it, I mean, it's like he didn't get built up much. We didn't see much development. You know, he was an interesting character for the future, and now he's not.
No, he's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of me, I mean, the cynical part of me thinks, you know, they didn't want to use him because the X-Men film used him better.
Possibly, yeah. I thought getting rid of at least one of the twins kind of simplified things for the Marvel films a bit more. But
yeah. But I mean, I was expecting there to be an incredible wow speedster moment in the film, and there wasn't. Like that's I expected true. To see something we'd never thought of as far as showing super speed. And honestly, I thought
he did have a good moment when they're fighting in Sokovia and Cap basically says to him, I need you to clear, you know, get the civilians off the street and start getting them away from the robots. And he's, you know, kind of racing ahead, getting the people out of harm's way. That was
he
cool.
does the same thing with the train in Korea.
Yeah.
The train's off the track and plowing through the streets.
Yeah, so as you say, he had some good moments, but yeah, you're right. And that Quicksilver in the X-Men films was possibly more inventive.
Well, that was the highlight of that X-Men film visually. Yeah. And there was, you know, that is just a fantastic bit of cinema, that 2 minutes of super speed in that. So, yeah, I was expecting something incredible and it didn't happen. I don't know if they couldn't think of it or I couldn't afford it. So.
Or they already had way too much happening on screen anyway, but, you know.
So, the super speed effects, you know, were about as fancy as the Flash TV show, which you'd never seen, so.
Well, I guess I've had a taste of things to come then.
Yeah. Spoilers, the Flash runs fast. Just
thanks.
Yeah.
Anyway,
most of the Avengers are off the city. Who's left? There's, I think, Scarlet Witch is freaking out because Quicksilver's dead. Everyone else has got off. She blows away a whole bunch of Ultron robots. Just disintegrates them completely.
Mm-hmm.
One's left. It reaches the magic MacGuffin in the middle of the church and flips the switch, and suddenly the city is plummeting. This was really cool. Like the whole thing, like it wasn't a slow fall. It was
no.
It was incredible. Everything on the city just started going into the air all at once, and debris and everything. And she looks like she's going to die, and then the Vision swoops in and gets her.
Yeah.
And then Thor does lightning on the ground, Iron Man has busted open a hole in the bottom, and everything blows to bits, and the city rains down in tiny chunks into the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Extinction level threat over.
Hooray!
And then we see the last remaining Ultron robot is staggering around and confronts the Vision. And the Vision said, you know, I think you were on the wrong track with this. You know, they could have evolved in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great line where Ultron says, you're disgustingly naive or something. And Vision said, well, I was born yesterday.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really great Joss Whedon line.
Mm.
Yeah. But there's fallout from this battle because the Hulk ended up in a Quinjet after chucking Ultron out. And the people in the helicarrier are trying to talk him back, you know, saying, turn off your cloaking device, come back here, you know, we'll get you. And the Hulk doesn't, he flies away. Mm. Now, why do you think the Hulk was doing that because he felt betrayed by Black Widow for using him that way? Or do you think he just felt like he was too dangerous to be around people again?
I think it was the latter. I think he realized what a threat and what a risk he was to normal people around him. And I think he genuinely just wanted to get away from it all and just be by himself for a while.
Interesting, because I actually think the opposite. I think he actually just felt used by Natasha.
Okay.
And, you know, like, he, how can they have a life together if she's going to turn him into the Hulk every time a threat comes along?
Mm.
You know, how can he trust her?
Yeah.
Because she was his connection to coming back to being a human.
Yeah, with the lullaby stimulus thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, then we see the fallout of everything. So Tony quits. Hawkeye retires.
Mm.
And Cap's decided that, you know, he doesn't really want to have that life that he pictured with Peggy Carter. He doesn't want to be normal. He wants to – he loves this – you know, training people involved, being involved in, you know, fighting for the good.
Yeah.
And so he's happy to stay on and lead what looks to be the new Avengers established at the end. And
yes.
Natasha's still smarting after, you know, losing Banner, but she's going to help him train. And then we see the new Avengers who were...
We had Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch.
We had the Vision.
The Vision.
We had the Falcon finally showed up, because we hadn't seen him since the party at the start of the film, and War Machine.
Yeah, the Falcon and the Commodore?
No.
No, sorry.
No one outside of Australia is going to get that.
The GT? Oh,
stop it.
Sorry.
And they're the new Avengers.
Yeah. So do you want to see the adventures of the new Avengers?
I do. That final scene actually made me optimistic that, yeah, we're going to see that new team in action at some stage. I hope the other guys that left the team do come back, even for a cameo or, you know, just to help them out. But, yeah, I thought, cool, we've got a new roster. It'll be interesting to see what adventures they go on, you know? So, yeah. Although that scene was kind of spoiled for me online, so I kind of knew it was going to happen, but I didn't know exactly who was going to be in the team. So, yeah, but it was cool to see it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the credits roll and we got our mid-credit scene, which was... Thor left Earth because he said something is up, someone's manipulating things behind the scenes and I'm going to find out what the deal is.
Mm.
So he's
with
on,
all the appearance of the gems.
Gems, yes. So Thor's put the dots together on Marvel's movie plans. So he goes off and then we get the mid-credit scene, which is Thanos opening his vault and pulling out his glove, which has little spots for the Infinity Stones,
mm-hmm.
and he says, fine, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was no end credit scene, which was annoying.
So you stayed around for it as well, did you?
Well, it's like 11:30 at night. I've got three kids and we have an hour and a half drive home after this. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So I haven't got three kids. I had an extra kid with me. So
right.
So Riff's son came along with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rifty Jr.
Rifty, okay. Yeah. Little Rifty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, that was disappointing. There was no additional credit scene, but eh.
Well, it's like Pavlov's dog. They've trained us to sit there. And you don't get a treat at the end. It's like, now I want to bite them.
Well, don't.
So, overall, I mean, my reaction the next day was I think it's like a 7 out of 10, which to me puts it, you know, well below the Avengers and Captain America 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man. It's probably around on par with Thor 2 for me. Thor 1. What about you, Mikey?
I'll agree with you. Yeah, I'd say it was actually 7.5. I enjoyed it a little bit better, a little bit more than you. But yeah, it still had, yeah, it wasn't a perfect film, but it was still pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit ambitious. It set up some big questions at the start, which it completely ignored, you know, about what the... I mean, there was sort of a implication that the team was becoming the authority.
Yeah.
And I find Ultron's madness didn't really make sense. You know, the fact, you know, he was competing with Tony, wanted to wipe out Tony, but he saw destroying the Earth as the way to do that. He didn't seem, I don't know, like he should be thinking more long term and thinking about controlling everything. I don't know. There was something that just didn't ring true. as far as, you know, this is his plan and he's evil because they have to fight him to make the film happen. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
I think it was, he saw, you know, to protect the world, he kind of had to give it a fresh start, which involved, you know, wiping out a good portion of them. So,
yeah.
Not perfect villain logic, but, you know, the bad guys can't always make sense.
Yeah. And, I mean, one thing that disappointed me, and, you know, this is probably unfair of me to say this, but there was no other connections to things going forward, you know, apart from, you know, Ulysses Claw, who, if you know his history in the comics, he straps on, like, a sonic weapon on his hand.
Yes.
And becomes, and he's Black Panther's archenemy or something. And Thanos, I mean, there was no Doctor Strange, there was no Ant-Man, there was no Guardians of the Galaxy, and no Black Panther. Like, I really wanted to see Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it just, you know, just a little cameo to say how cool he would be. I really got high hopes for that film. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what connections, if any, they have in the Ant-Man film, which is out soonish too, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's July, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So that looks like fun.
And they shouted out to all the girlfriends. So there was a shout out to Pepper Potts and to Jane Foster. So yeah, that was nice. They got mentioned. And I mean, I want to see it again because there was so much funny dialogue that I can't remember now. And as I said, busy action scenes. But I mean, I could honestly wait to see it on video at home.
Yeah.
At this point. Like, which I didn't feel about the Avengers. I actually saw the Avengers twice at the cinema.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's a long time from my days of seeing Star Wars, like 8 times in the cinema when I was a kid. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, overall, I think Marvel should keep making movies because they do okay.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, let's not get into how we worry about DC movies.
God. Yeah, what a shame we've still got, a year to wait for Batman vs. Superman.
I know.
Also kind of a shame that it is Batman vs. Superman, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah, can we get done with heroes in conflict at some point?
Mm.
You know, maybe they could fight a bad guy instead of each other.
You and your logic, honestly.
I'm sorry. But, I mean, I'm not super negative about it. I just expected I would like it more. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Okay. I think we're done with Doomsplaining. Any last thoughts on it?
I'll just say I rate it.
You rate it?
It's a good film. Yeah. I'll gladly see it again, but like you, at home. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. All right. That's it for our show. Thank you for sticking with us for all the spoilers. Next week on the show, we haven't worked that out yet, so we'll be just as surprised as you.
I have a feeling there'll be some Grant Morrison stuff happening.
It's that time again.
Yeah.
Cool.
As always, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can contact us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page.
Yeah, and if you're inclined, why not leave us a iTunes review, because we've only got one.
Yeah.
And it's lonely. You don't want your iTunes review to be lonely. No. Give it a friend.
Make them breed like a Catholic rabbit.
Nice.
Nice. Alrighty, that's our show. Thanks, guys. We'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.